Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102-106.3 The Game here on this Thursday, live at the Omni Nashville Hotel, Kitchen Notes. I'm very excited for our next guest, Jeff Fisher. Coach Jeff Fisher going to hang out with us for the 10 o'clock hour. Man, Greg Pogue is here as well. Talk some Cats, talk some football with him. Coach, what's up? How are you?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Nice morning. Let's reach out and touch those people that were affected by these storms last night, man. We don't have a whole lot of information right now, but we're hoping that – and the one thing that's cool about Nashville, that you see, the help was already there. The storm blew through. Volunteers, people, they're telling people – don't get into your chainsaw stuff right now and start chopping up trees that are down because we got wires. This was at midnight last night.
Yeah,
you know, but
right.
We're just kind of hoping and keeping our fingers crossed that, you know, everybody was able to pull through this thing that happened last night. But it's great to be here.
Yeah, I remember the flood of 2010 with you and Vince over in West Nashville, and that area just got bombarded. It was like 2 weeks after the flood. You guys came in and y'all were there all day for several days cleaning out houses.
Oh, yeah. Red Cross and everybody asked us to come down. We said, sure. So we loaded a couple buses and went in. We had one block, and we had about six houses.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for the homeowners, the water was up to the ceiling. So you had to basically strip those houses down to framing and things like that. And I remember being back in the back room trying to unplug and unhook and break down, you know, it was a refrigerator, whatever it was. And I go, I forget who it was. And if I knew who it was, I wouldn't embarrass him. I go, hey, man, in that toolbox over there, there's a Phillips screwdriver. Would you get it for me? And he comes walking out with three different things. None of them were screwdrivers. I go, oh, man. Yeah. Here, take this chainsaw. No, yeah. And that's actually something, I mean, that was one of my most vivid memories is when we went up to Clarksville early on and did, you know, helped out for a day or two. I looked over and Steve McNair's got a chainsaw and he's ripping.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, people are going, coach, your quarterback's working it. You know, and I go, hey, look, he's a country boy, grew up on a farm, man. He knows how to run a chainsaw. He's the only one here. Yeah. It does.
That's, you know? That's where that country strong comes into play.
Yeah. Bud Adams wasn't really happy about it, but I was okay with, I trusted Steve. But.
Yeah. For sure. A lot going on with the Cats a couple weeks in. We'll get to this now that opponent change for this week. So the Salina Liberty will be coming to Nashville instead of Philadelphia.
Right.
Obviously, new league, a lot of things happening, but still going to have an opponent, and it'll
absolutely
be Salina.
Absolutely, yeah, it's Salina. And they won their first game. They had to cancel. They had a Monday night game scheduled, I believe it was against Wichita, and they canceled. And the immediate response was, oh, boy, the league's collapsing. But, no, they made an educated decision based on the weather.
Yeah.
That was ripping through there, and it was good that, you know, good that they did
that.
So they were off. So Salina's coming here, and, you know, they're a good football team, you know. It's really kind of fun to, you know, just get some scouting reports from, you know, our staff and just kind of brush up on who's doing what. But, yeah, there was an issue in Philadelphia. It's these things happen in startup leagues, things that, you know, those unintended consequences of decisions that are made. And so Philly's trying to regroup, but in the meantime, you know, we're the model.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to come here and play here. After the word got out at how successful, you know, our opener was against Minnesota a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I mean, as far as that's concerned, our biggest problem we had was dealing with long lines. And that's okay. You know, it was just so cool to see everybody back. I slid up and sat up in the stands, you know, about 10 rows back with Julian, my daughter, and my granddaughter. And my 4-year-old granddaughter's looking around, and she's doing the wave. She's never seen anything before. And they got they brought the wave back, you know, for the opener. But so the opener was good. You know, our trip up to Albany was a good trip. We didn't obviously come away with the win. We had a couple of, you know, when we lost the young man to the 49ers the day after the opener, that was awesome for the league and for this franchise. And then we had another receiver go down, you know, with a head injury. And so we were we took precautionary measures and held him, took his helmet, and so we're down a couple of receivers. And that in this world, that can, I mean, you can easily make the case that that's like losing 20.
I know one that gets off at 2 o'clock. I can send him your way.
Okay, yeah,
if you
that's
want to.
Fine. Yeah, I know. I mean,
he trash talks.
We need. I'd like to see someone just like he. Just get through one series.
Yeah.
See if he can catch the first ball they throw to him. So he'll have an opinion, I'm sure, when you talk to him.
Oh, yeah. Good. I will say, go back to the opening day. That was fantastic. I mean, it was packed. It was fun. It was exciting. It was everything you'd want an opening day. And I imagine Sunday, the same thing. Mother's Day, come on out and have fun again.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, the Mother's Day thing, we were excited about that, is, you know, provided that we got the kickoff start at 2:30, you know, gives everybody a chance to do brunch and stuff like that, and then, you know, come bring mom down here and watch some indoor football. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. We expect things to, you know, the little things that, you know, we regroup the day after and go, okay, well, what are our issues, and that's what you do. You do that whether you're in your 10th year in the franchise or you're just had your first game.
Right.
How do you improve? So we got a good surrounding group. So we're going to improve over last one, and yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Well, look, I grew up going to that auditorium. There's always been problems getting in, so it does not bother native Nashvillians at all when you go over there.
Well, it's, you know, just the little things. I mean, we had a outstanding anthem singer set up, and a PA announcer said now and introduced, and then there was everybody's ready, and there was a delay.
Yeah,
and then there was a delay, and I was like, okay, what are we doing here? Well, and then they got started, and then they did the anthem, but the wheel fell off of the little truck that was going to be the queue. You know, it was Cool Cat's truck or something like that. The back wheel fell off of it, and the queue was when the truck came out, that's when we'd start the anthem. So everybody's waiting for the truck to come out. So it's those, you know, those little yeah. Just fun things. So, yeah, it was just, you know, once you get through it, you realize, oh, well, we can fix that.
So. Yeah, I'm going to say – there has been a rumor out there about making you commissioner of the league. Would you do – I mean, but take it a step further. I'm not saying you're taking Roger Goodell's job, but would that be something, anything at a level you'd be interested in? You know the game. You know the people. You're well-respected. You're beloved.
It would seriously dent my hunting and fishing over the next 6 months. So – I'm going to help. And
the league office will move to Montana.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, by the way, yeah, we're going to have the coaches up and do a little float trip and teach them how to fly fish. But so I'm going to help, but I'm not, you know, I'm obviously flattered that there's been a movement and a push towards that. But it's just because of the experience. And, you know, I think that, you know, my experience with the Alliance where I helped them for a little bit, and then in the USFL, you can anticipate the unintended consequences and the potholes in the road around the corner, and so that's where I'm trying to help them. But I don't see that happening. There's some quality people out there that have been in this side of football, the indoor version, for 30, 40 years that know what they're doing. And trust me, I've been talking to them. So we'll have this thing's going to be just fine. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation. And, you know, anytime, you know, social media, you know, is the world we're living in now. But this thing, we're right now kind of up there at the top with a couple other franchises as far as being the model franchises and the return. And so we've got some smaller franchises that are extremely valuable to, you know, the success of this league that we're looking after. And so, yeah, there will be some more shuffling with respect to the schedule, but we're going to have a playoff and we're going to have a championship game and we're going to do all those things. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to see how things, you know, are put together. In this world, remember that old phrase, CYA?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's different. It means something different here, and it means can you adjust? So
yeah.
You got to be able to adjust, and that's the challenge. But the goal coming in was we're going to get through year one, and even though on a daily basis we're saying cats are back, after year one that people are going to say, hey, the cats are back, and we'll be a standard for, you know, for indoor football.
You just said that, you know, the Cats and a couple of other franchises are the model. I feel like when you were first approached about this, first got involved in this, that was something that you said, hey, I want us to be the model for this league. Why was that so important?
Well, I believe that, you know, when the previous Cats era ended, they ended, for the most part, as the model. This was a first class. Everybody has the memories, and they have the experiences. And I know the venue was different, but when you look right down at it, it was they were the model back then. And so, you know, with Nashville changing and the market and the demographics and everything, we want to take advantage of every opportunity. We don't want to miss opportunities. And, you know, and that includes everything from how to win football games to how you can have the biggest impact in the community and things like that. So right now, even though, this is all happening fast, where things are falling together for us, I'll give you a great example. We're reached out to by the Nashville Fire Department.
Yeah.
And, they've got, firefighters all over the department that are Cat fans. They want to come down and see it. Well, we've taken it a step further, and we're going to partner up with them and do some special things for them. They've got a really cool thing going now with other departments from other jurisdictions with regard to flag football, and they've got a championship game at Pearl Cone on Saturday that nobody knew about, and we're going to go out, and we're going to be there.
That's great.
And we're going to get involved, and then we're going to bring the firefighters in, and then we're going to take care of the moms of the firefighters and their wives, and we're just going to, it's just those things that are just kind of generically falling in our lap, and why not take advantage of it?
Coach Jeff Fisher is hanging out with us here at the Omni Nashville Hotel. We'll have much more with him on the Cats and football in general here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I'd Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Thursday. Omni Nashville Hotel at Kitchen Notes. Joe, how many bowls of oatmeal is that now?
I'm at four now. Coach Jeff Fisher is with us at the Omni Nashville Hotel. We had a great discussion yesterday, Coach, about two-a-days, how they don't do them anymore in high school and college and all on and on. When you're at USC, did you have three-a-days? I mean, it was intense, right?
Well, yeah, we would have kind of a walkthrough or a special teams thing after dinner, so after we had two practices. I mean, that whole experience was, you talk about intense, I'll never forget. I mean, the first practice, a veteran player, an All-American, came up to me and from the because I was a receiver, and he said, "Hey, dude, what are you doing with my number on?" So he was, you have different color, you got, light and dark, offense and defense. Well, he was a defensive player, and I was an offensive player coming in, and I had his number on an offensive white jersey, and I was just like, I was terrified. I didn't know what to do. I went in the equipment, man. I go, change my number. He goes, what's the problem? I go, whoever number seven is out there was like, he didn't want me wearing his number, so I'll take any number. So equipment man, he gave me 40, okay? That's like being a receiver with number 50 on. It's like you talk about speed and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, 19's a fast look, 40? So anyway, I survived and remained number 40. But yeah, it was
this Bears or USC?
This was SC.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. So now you talk about two-a-day practices. Three-a-day practices once I left college, and then you go to the NFL back then. Now there were six preseason games.
Good
so,
Lord.
And there was really no... Nobody, there was, how should I say this, there was not a union necessarily representing the players.
Right.
And so they did, Dick was Dicka, and it was like, yeah, we put pads on twice a day. And then on occasion would have that afternoon or evening thing. But this was for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And you just pounded on each other for 6 weeks. But back then, things were different. There wasn't an off-season program. So you needed training camp to get into shape.
Yeah.
Guys did nothing during the off-season. They would come to camp. And, nowadays, your team is in the best shape. It's ever going to be on a calendar year the night before training camp starts in the NFL currently. And so that creates different challenges. It's like, how do we make sure if this team is in the best shape of its season right now, every single player, how do you keep them up there? you know, because what happens is if you have two-a-day practices and you have, you know, some tough things, and then all of a sudden you start to, you know, that line starts to drop and it's hard to get back up.
But yeah.
It's how do you keep your team, you know, at that level of conditioning mentally and physically. So it's a challenge, but it's changing.
Yeah, the backfield, when you were at SC, you, Ronnie Lott, who are the other two?
Dennis Smith.
Good
and,
Lord.
And a 6'2", 210-pound corner by the name of Joey Browner.
Wow.
What team? You know, hey, go figure, all three of them win in the first round, too. So that just kind of shows you how messed up and how sometimes the scouting, you know, programs and different NFL clubs can get things all wrong, because they had all three of these guys as first rounders and they had me as a no rounder. I went the seventh round, baby.
That was a trip.
That was day two.
Yeah.
That was early, man. I remember that one. It's
Did you guys
story.
Play Bama in Birmingham when you were at SC, or was that?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And beat them,
so,
right?
Yeah, 78-79. Yeah, we went down there. Both teams were undefeated at 6-0 or whatever it was. I can't remember. And we went down to Legion, which was really cool. This game was played at Legion. And we beat the Crimson Tide. I think it was like 28-14. I mean, beat them in a good game, yeah. So now, you know, we're undefeated. They got a loss. We go back to Southern California and playing Arizona State, who's just gotten in, you know, is the Pac-8 thing and the Pac-10 thing, all that stuff. They just come in, and we lost. We had three centers get hurt, and we ended up with a defensive tackle trying to play center. So we lost this game, the next game. And then both teams continued and were undefeated, so we were co-national champions. There's a great picture of both head coaches tugging on the national championship trophy, and that was probably for Coach John Robinson, you know, the coach I played for and I'm still in touch with, great man. That was probably his most memorable moment, was sharing that trophy.
Wow.
Coach Jeff Fisher is with us. When you got into the league, what was that kind of that first, like, oh my moment, maybe another word you use, but playing for Coach Ditka, Coach Ryan, you coached with Buddy Ryan later on and coached against Coach Ditka, but that first just realizing, like, okay, these guys are expecting a whole lot, but this is the best place to be.
Well, you know, when I got in, when I was drafted by the Bears, Neil Armstrong was the head coach.
Okay.
So I got drafted by the Bears, knew really nothing about the Bears other than what kids knew back then. It was Walter Payton.
Yeah.
I was a DB, so I knew about their safety, Fensick and Plank, and Vince Evans, who was, you know, at SC, was a teammate of mine. I was a freshman when he left, and he was one of the quarterbacks there. So here I am walking in. That's really all I know. I thought Neil Armstrong was an astronaut. I didn't think he was a head coach. And so that was the transition year. It's really a cool story. How about this? Alan Page was on the team.
No.
And Alan Page had left Minnesota, and he had signed with the Bears. It was his last year. He was an attorney. He might have been a judge at that time, but he was still rushing the passer as a three technique at probably 215 pounds. He got into long distance running and things like that.
Wow.
But Alan Page was there. Alan saw the writing on the wall. He called a defensive meeting only. He got the whole defense together, and the defense wrote a letter to George Halas, recommending that in the event that there's a coaching change and Neil Armstrong would be out and he would make a new hire, please consider keeping Buddy Ryan, the defensive staff, together, because this defense has a pretty good chance of being really special.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, I got a copy of it. And,
oh, cool.
Still, but so that letter went to Coach Halas. Coach Halas hired Mike Ditka and said, you can do whatever you want with the offensive staff, but the defensive staff is staying. So right there and then, at that moment in time, you got these two personalities, and Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka, that just didn't see eye to eye. And so that's how that was.
Wow.
Through 82 through 85 when Buddy left. And so I had somebody ask me a week ago, talking about that and that Super Bowl and 85 Super Bowl and things, and how come the team, they carried Buddy off the field and not Mike? Well, it was the defensive guys that hoisted Buddy up because Buddy gave them kind of the clue the night before, and it was in that meeting, that he may not be returning, that he may be getting a head coaching job. So it was the defensive guys. It had nothing to do with Buddy or Mike or anything. It was just like the defense held Buddy up in the air after the Super Bowl. So anyway, that's kind of how it all went down. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, the stuff there. Yeah, the stuff is really cool. So, that meeting the night before when Buddy got in and told the defense, it was pretty power-packed.
No wonder y'all beat the piss out of the Patriots.
Well, I mean, Steve McMichael stood up moments after Buddy walked out. Buddy used to stand up in front of the defense, have a few words, leave, and then we would put on the, go figure, the 16-millimeter tape and watch, a half of our opponent just as the defense after Buddy left, traditionally for every game. So night for the Super Bowl, Buddy has just simple words with the defense. And he got up there, he took his glasses off, and he looked down. He never takes his glasses off. And he kind of very emotionally said in a broken voice, no matter what happens tomorrow, you guys will always be my effing heroes.
That's awesome.
That was it. And he walked out. And McMichael stood up, and he grabbed the projector and threw it through the dry erase board, and everybody got up and walked out. Had I wanted to bet on the game,
yeah,
I would probably done pretty well at that moment in time.
So in 85, you were hurt, right?
Yeah, I got hurt in train camp. So I stepped in. I was back. I played 84. I went through the, we can talk for hours about refrigerator Perry and what happened and how that all was all put together. Incidentally, that was bad blood. That hurt. It was a hurtful decision that Mike didn't anticipate, that he would find some way to highlight William, get him a touchdown run. Yet number 34 standing over there on the sideline in the Super Bowl and didn't score a touchdown.
Right.
So Walter had a hard time with that. But people think I'm crazy and full of you know what, but Walter and I duck hunted together.
Yeah.
So how a California boy, USC, California surfer boy, and a gymnast from Jackson State end up having things in common, but I did. And everybody to this day will say they had something in common, but he kind of put his arm around me. It was kind of cool.
But it's football. That's what I tell people. Football, there is no black and white in football.
No.
It's a team. You're brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if Richard Dent called you today, you'd give him the shirt off your back. I know Steve McMichael was going through the troubles and all.
All those guys. No.
It's football, man.
No, it is. This locker room was a great locker room. And you know, it evolved over time. Mike comes in there in 82, and that year's strike shortened, And so – And canceled and all that stuff. So he comes back, or maybe it was 83, but he comes back and, 83 we go, 84 we lose the championship game to the 49ers. And, and guess what Bill Walsh did at the end of that game? He freaking put Guy McIntyre, at guard, at fullback, and he just pounded us and kept the ball. And Singletary is mad, and that team, I'm going to tell you what, that team was so mad when we lost that championship game. And then there was just kind of no stopping them. I mean, that was the attitude. I mean, these guys stood up and did a Super Bowl video thing, before the season. And so, it was there was no stopping. We were down 14-0, maybe. I forget what it was in the opener against Tampa Bay there that year.
Yeah,
I mean, we're playing awful defense. Freaking scored a couple times on defense. We won the game and end up going through that, and then the only loss was against Miami.
So the Super Bowl shuffle was, if I remember correctly, and I love history of the NFL, was taped the next day when you guys got back from Miami?
No.
Okay.
No, the Super Bowl shuffle was taped in the late spring, I believe, probably early summer before training camp in the 85 season.
Okay.
Okay, so 84 – it might have been released at that time. But,
okay.
So I don't know the specifics. They didn't ask me to be in it because I can't dance. Nor can Gary Fencek and Steve Fuller either. Right. I was like, come on, man. Yeah,
a lot of guys in that video can't dance.
That's right.
But, or rap or sing or anything.
The 85 Bears, I mean, it's kind of – they'll never be replaced. I mean, defensively – and I was saw both sides. I was part of a both sides, but the Philly team, the Philly defense that Buddy put together, that I got to coordinate the last 2 years was better.
Let's get into that because I still want to talk about. We had to break, but I want to talk that 85 Bears team and what the Perfect. Eagles, because I think that 85 Bears team, me, single greatest team history of the National Football League. You can argue, but I'm going to tell you.
We'll do that. Coming up next, also, a lot of different Mother's Day things going on at the Cats game. We'll tell you about that here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
All right, Mike, I stop them cold. Part of the defense, big and bold. I've been jamming for quite a while, doing what's right and setting aside. But give me a chance.
Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. The Super Bowl shuffle.
Nice.
Very well done.
Guys.
Very well done. Mike Singletary.
Yeah. Singletary. Yeah, so he was drafted second round that year out of Baylor. Keith Van Horn was the first round pick.
Wow.
Keith was my roommate at SC. Keith got drafted the day before, first pick, you know, first round. And so Keith, hey, man, congratulations, you know, give me a call when you get back and everything. And so he, as far as I'm concerned, he's gone. He's in Chicago and everything. So I'm out at my folks' house, and this is day two, so round 7 through 12, and phone rings, and it's some cousin of mine going, hey, man, did you get drafted yet? And I knew that the phone thing was going to be all day long, people. And then the phone rang again, and it was Keith Van Horn, my roommate, the teammate at USC. And I go, what are you doing? What's going on? I thought you were back in Chicago. He goes, yeah, I'm here. He goes, I'm in the draft room, man. He goes, they just drafted you.
Oh, yes. That's cool.
So now I get to go back with my roommate.
Wow.
So Keith was a first round pick. Singletary was a second. And then, you know, that year, that class was, I was with Todd Bell, deceased, and didn't actually get to play in the game because of contract things. But Dave Duerson replaced him. But Leslie Frazier. Leslie and I were rookies together on that team. Leslie was an undrafted college free agent from Alcorn.
Well, the more you talk about this team, Jim McMahon was the perfect quarterback because he didn't take any gruff from Dicker, right? I mean, they were just button heads.
Correct. Jim was perfect. I mean, Jim's a great person, you know, really, really talented. He had the instincts, you know, at the quarterback position. It didn't always look pretty, but he knew exactly what he was doing. And he had fun doing it, you know. He just was, you know, the sunglass thing with Mac. Jim wore sunglasses the whole career, you know, all day long. Well, when he was freaking 9 or 10 years old, he's pulling a knot out of a baseball mitt with a fork, and he sticks it in his eye. So he's got eye issues, you know, and that's where people just didn't, you know, they didn't, you know, really, you know, understand and all the background. But yeah, he was special. I remember sitting there talking to one of the coaches about him, and you know, one of the offensive coordinators at the time. He goes, the guys just see stuff that you can't coach, you know.
Wow.
He audibled to it's a blitz beater. I mean, he just sided to a side adjustment, which usually happens after the snap. But he saw something pre-snap, and the coaches are looking at it, and they're looking at the safety. The safety was Washington. It was Tony Peters was a good safety back then. And he's looking at there's nothing. He goes, when Peters blitzed, he goes, he always lined up at 5 yards. He's at 8 yards, but he blitzes from 8. How come you audible it? He goes, Jim says, well, I'm just kind of scanning. I'm looking at him, and he was looking down. He wouldn't look me in the eye.
Oh.
And he goes, I knew something was up, so he throws the touchdown pass.
One of the greatest plays, I don't know if you were still the Bears there, the Vikings, when they were going to blitz, and Walter Payton hit the linebacker coming through, and McMahon's falling down and launches an 80-yard bomb to Willie Gault. I mean, that is one of the greatest, I think, NFL offensive plays ever, because he audibled, Walter heard it, hit the backer, touchdown.
Yeah, they were on the same page, and that's the thing. You know, everything about the 85 Bears was the defense, but the offense was you talk about Willie Gault and, you know, Dennis McKinnon and, you know, the Matt Sui and Walter's relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, they're best friends. Walt, when Walter was on his deathbed, he wanted to talk to Matt. It was the last person he talked to. So, you know, these guys, this team was really, really close. But what happened was that the offense was kind of scattered and things. Yeah. And, you know, you're trying to put it together. And, you know, the defense kind of made the offense tougher and tougher and tougher. And, you know, these guys, I mean, Mark Bortz was a guard from Iowa, ended up starting that year in 85 Bears. And, you know, I mean, one of the off seasons up there shortly thereafter, he's an Iowa kid, an outdoor kid. He's ice fishing. The dude's ice fishing in January and breaks through the ice and's got to pull himself to shore or up on a boat or something like that. But and kept fishing, you know. So these were some characters up there.
Oh, great!
You talk about your relationship with Walter Payton. How special? I know we weren't here long, but how special was it to have Jarrett here?
It was because of my relationship with Walter and Connie, and knowing that. Well, what happened was when Willis McGahee at University of Miami blew his ACL out in the opener. Jared goes in and ends up being the starting tailback the whole year. And Jared was a better soccer player than he was a football player. So anyway, the season ends, and I get a call from his agent, who was Jerry Venisi, who was the GM of the 85 Bears, and he's trying to help Jared, and he goes, "Hey, man, can you help place him?" I go, "Yeah, I'll help you." So looked around, and who needed backs, free agent backs or late picks, and nothing happened. And then Jerry calls me, and he can't get Jared into a camp because – and that's the thing that, you know, I was a little disappointed, is because, you know, head coaches or GMs didn't want to be the team that cut Walter Payton's kid.
Yeah.
And I said, "Come on, man. You know, come on." And so we worked with them for a year and a half, 2 years. It's a cool story. We were going to Houston, and we were going to activate Jared to the active roster. So we go to Houston. Houston's just getting started. They're not.
So this is like 2002.
Yeah. And so we called Connie and his mom, and brought her to Houston because I was anticipating the fact that Jared not only was going to be up and active, but he may get to play. And do the research, he had a touchdown run in the game, and his mom got to see him.
That's cool.
And it was really his only carry.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a great story and things like that, but it was, you know, it's all about – and Jared's – class act. I obviously everybody had different relationships with him, but his stories, man, you know, the shoes he wore and to describe those, what he wore and the athlete that he was and how Walter just trained. You know, so I was talking to somebody a couple of days ago about those days, and somebody reached out, and you know, Walter reached out to another player in the league and said, "Hey, man, if you're in Chicago, you want to train, come on." He goes, "Well, I'll try to make it." He goes, "Send me your." So Walter sends his training regimen, and the dude decided never to come to Chicago because he didn't think he could do what he did. It's amazing.
I watched
Walter. Walter was a gymnast at Jackson State, too, by the way. Okay. We had money going on it. We were about six or eight of us messing around after practice, and he said he could walk on his hands across the field. And we said, "No way." And he kicked from his feet to his hands and walked across the whole field.
Amazing.
And he hit the upright with the football from midfield, you know, 5 out of 10 times. He was an amazing athlete. And you didn't want to – you didn't want to tackle him. Then when I left and went to Philly, and we were playing the Bears the next year, I had the DBs in there. Herman Edwards would be one of them.
Yep.
But I had the DBs in there, and I just said, "Man, you guys haven't played these guys in a while. Do not. This is how you tackle this dude, okay? If you come in high, he's going to hit you in the mouth with his forearm, and he's going to knock you out. If you come in low, he's going to freaking hit you with his knees, and you're not going to get the dude down, man. You got to run him to the sideline."
Wow.
Yeah.
Has there ever been another running back that you have seen where you have to run them to the sideline to tackle them?
I'm talking about DBs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably not. I mean, you know, I wouldn't. I'm glad I didn't have to tackle Earl Campbell. I mean, I saw Ronnie Lott and Dennis Smith put a hurting on George Rogers in the Coliseum you know, Roger's senior year at South Carolina, but nobody, I mean, not the with the violence, and it's the quickness and the stop and start.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Walter had.
Walter has one of the greatest quotes. It is, "When you're good, you will tell everybody. When you're great, they'll tell you."
Correct. That's awesome.
I love that quote.
Yeah.
So you, awesome. you kind of alluded to going to Philadelphia with Buddy and what that was like. I mean, they, Reggie and, you know, those Eagles teams, you mentioned Coach Edwards being a part of that. What was that transition like? Because that was kind of the beginning of your coaching career.
Yeah, I mean, standing in the back of the – behind the offense, or, you know, when the defense – at the 85 Super Bowl, you know, I was healthy the whole year. I practiced and stuff. So when the defense was going, I'd stand in the back next and talk to Buddy way back behind the free safety in the back of the field. He just always liked to stand behind. And during the week is when he told me that he thought he was going to get the Eagle job, and he wanted – He told me, he said this, he says, "You and what's your name going to get married?" And I go, "Yeah, we're going to get married." Da-da. He goes, "Well, you need to tell your fiance to throw you a retirement party because you can't freaking play anymore." That's how he started the conversation. I go, "Really?" He goes, "Well, I, you know, hey, man, I'm, you know, whatever." And he goes, "No, seriously." He goes, "I think I'm going to get the Philadelphia Eagle job, and I want you to come put the defense in. And so I want you to think about it." So I knew Wednesday before the Super Bowl. I didn't say anything. I knew why the defense had reacted the way they did in that room. So you know, I ultimately, I mean, a week later, I called him back. I had 2 years left on my contract, and I was going to try to snake out another year somehow, some way. And I called Buddy, and I said, "Man, I just can't do it." And he goes, "Okay, my friend." He said, I thought you'd have been a hell of a coach. And I hung up, and Julie and I sat there and discussed it. And I had a business going in Chicago, and I called him. But I felt just so empty inside. And I called him. I told him. I said, "Hey, man, I'll see you at the airport." He goes, "Okay." So then he ripped my ass because I got there for a week, and then had committed to taking a group of people over to Switzerland skiing. Emery Moorhead and I, and some guys. We took some fan group over, and so I took my first NFL coaching job. I was there for a week and gone for two. but anyway, Reggie. I mean, the Reggie Whites and the stories and how he put that team together was. It was really interesting. I mean, the defense ended up being Golic and Pitts and Clyde Simmons, who's down the street coaching for Eddie. Go figure. That's the relationship. And so, and then Reggie, man, it was, and then, you know, the linebackers and the safety and Andre Waters and just the group.
Right. Where were you when you got the call Jerome Brown was killed?
I talked to Jerome about a week before. I was at the 49ers. And we had stayed in touch. So Bud Carson went in, and Jerome was playing better and playing good and stuff like that. But Jerome called me about a week before because we were kind of close. And he said, "There's rumors out there that I've gone to a fat farm to try to lose weight," stuff like that. And he's like, he wanted to set the record straight. He goes, "No, I got a nutritionist, and I'm trying to lose weight because I want to keep playing." And so we had a good relationship.
Right.
So, you know, I was at the 49ers when I found out. It's just tragic.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know?
I know, because he was with the Eagles with you for a while. Then
yeah.
You went to the Rams and then to the Niners, correct?
Right. Jerome, yes. I went Rams-Niners.
I'm a good stalker.
Years. You are. Yeah. Lost a championship game to the Dallas Cowboys 2 years in a row when I was with the 49ers. So that was a cool experience. I got there during the transition from Montana to Steve.
Yeah.
So Joe was there the first year. I was there, and so, yeah, he was cool. He, you know, he'd always run the two-minute drill against the defense on Friday, try to, you know, just to give him a good look. And so I kind of tell him some concepts, and the ball never touched the ground. He just smoked the defense. And that whole decision there, Joe was healthy. And the decision to go with Steve, I mean, it was in duck good. I mean, they went to the championship game.
Yeah.
But then the next year they went to the championship game with him. And then the next year they got it all and beat the Chargers.
He's Coach Jeff Fisher hanging out with us. Hey, there are 2-for-1 ticket deals for the Cats game. Go to the NashvilleCats.com for Mother's Day. Use the code MOTHER and you can get 2-for-1 on the ticket deals. They're going to have a block party starting at 12:30, which is free and open to the public. And, of course, if you listen on the radio, Eli Gold on the call, George Plaster going to be alongside with him. So Eli and Plaz and two-time Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Jamie Floyd will sing the anthem with Ty Herndon, and she wrote the Cats theme song, Claws Out. So look forward to that coming up Sunday. We'll wrap things up with Coach Fisher. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, here on this Thursday. Coach Jeff Fisher hanging out with us and just telling stories and everything. We haven't even talked about your head coaching career at all. Like, we've been talking about this. Has been great.
This is all, yeah, way before all that happened.
How many head coaches came off of those Bears teams? You, Singletary, you said Leslie Frazier.
Ron Rivera. Yeah. And we had coordinator at different levels, but Kenny Margum got into coaching. I don't think there was really anybody else, but yeah. Rivera and Mike and I.
The Eagles, you had Herm.
I had Herm, yeah, just 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end. Yeah.
So. Yeah, he's awesome.
No, actually, I didn't. I think we cut him at the end of camp.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh, well, Herm.
Yeah. Herm was at the end.
Did you know, when you met George Halas, did you know who you were meeting? Meaning, this is the NFL.
Oh, it was so cool. My first time I met him, it was my rookie year, and we were head start off slow, and Walter just fumbled, but. 2 weeks prior, I had a return a punt for a touchdown. And so Coach Halas decides to call a team meeting. And so this was under Neil Armstrong. And so we got this team meeting, and Coach Halas is going to come in and talk to the team because he thought they should be doing, playing better. And so I see him in the hallway coming towards the meeting room well before the meeting, and I introduced myself. And he actually said, oh, you know, hey, it's really nice to meet you. Hey, that was a great touchdown run on your return.
Nice.
Well, thanks, coach, and stuff. So I walked off, and then the meeting started. It went for an hour. He told stories about before World War II and World War I and just everything. But he always brought it right back. But he goes, anybody got a football? Because he's going to talk to Walter now, because Walter got one knocked out. I mean, Walter didn't fumble or whatever, but he had lost. And Coach Halas got up there and showed Walter, once he got the football, how to hold it properly. And so the meeting was awesome. And for me, just the history, only because my grandfather at the time went to Lake Forest College and was George Halas's ball boy at Great Lakes Naval Station. So there was a lot of cool coincidences and on that. But so the Halas's meeting is over and everybody's walking around, and I happened to just kind of see him leaving the facility, and I just said, Coach, I just want to say it was nice meeting you, and I appreciate your whatever. And he says, well, it's nice meeting you too, Doug. cool.
Coach Doug Fisher. Isn't it?
Did you ever, in the back of your mind, want to coach the Bears?
It just never really happened, you know, but you think about it. But I knew the organization really well and everything. But I obviously have absolutely no regrets not getting the opportunity, in particular because of what we did here, you know.
Yep.
So, you always wonder sometimes. But I've watched them and see, you know, what do we got going here, you know, kind of thing. But I don't look at them any differently than anybody else in the league right now.
Did it ever set in with you, like, after you left here and, you know, you had time to kind of decompress and think about it, but, like, as long as you were here, that doesn't happen. Like, what was it, 16 years total? That doesn't happen, especially in today's NFL. I mean, if a guy gets 2 years, he's lucky. So, like,
my kids are 5 years apart.
Yeah. Right?
And all three of my kids went to the same elementary, middle, and attended the same high school.
Yeah.
That does not happen in coaching. So, I mean, I'm so blessed. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is to give back to Nashville, because Nashville blessed my family and me beyond imagination. So that was how, that was the reason for the cats and all this, all this stuff. It's just a kind of, this is home and I love this place. And this place was great. And, you know, the more people we can reach out and touch, the better.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. And if I go long, D-Mace will complain. So we got to hand it off.
That's okay. Thanks so much.
We want to do this again. This was great. Yeah.
Again, real quick, 2-for-1 ticket deal using the coupon code MOTHER at thenashvillecats.com. Block party at 12:30. I'm telling you, folks, go to the game. It was a fantastic experience 2 weeks ago. It'll be even better on Sunday. Coach, thank you.
Coach Jeff Fisher, Big Joe, Chase McCabe. We'll talk at you tomorrow at 9, a special Mother's Day edition of the show. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is coming up next.
Hey, as always, we'll leave the show every day to our guys out there. If you're struggling, please, on your cell phone, you can dial 988. Please talk to someone. Know that we love you, and our world is a better place because you are here. God has you on this earth for a purpose. Please understand that. If you need to talk, please reach out and know that we love you guys.
Amen to that. 102.5, 106.3, the game.